Okay, let's go over to page 160 bottom.
160 what?
160 at the bottom. That sentence before the quote kind of sums up what we've said. The author of Aurora makes wisdom not only the guide, but also the goal. Last sentence there on that paragraph before the quote. Author of Aurora makes wisdom not only the guide, but also the goal. So we're looking at the biblical figure with the psychological importance, and it's going to require transformation before it can be utilized. This next passage isn't that complicated. And Senior, these guys are all alchemists, by the way. Senior Alphidius. If you want, you can look in the back there on the. This study guide, I've tried to give you some idea of who they are. It's not really that important for our purposes. Naught is more base in appearance than she, and naught is more precious in nature than she, and God also hath not appointed her to be bought for a price. She it is that Solomon chose to have instead of life, and above all beauty and health. In comparison of her, he compared not unto her the virtue of any precious stone. For all gold in her sight shall be esteemed as a little sand, and silver shall be counted as clay. And this is not without cause, for to gain her is better than the merchandise of silver and the most pure gold. Well, nothing terribly remarkable there, except that these Sophie experiences appear as valueless, but they are really, in fact, very, very valuable. Stone is cheap and precious at once. And over on 162, I think how we experience that in therapy, the images, see where I am, 1, 2, 3, 5 lines down. The images and symbols that rise up directly from the unconscious and have not been judged, interpreted, or changed in anything else by discriminating activity of consciousness. That's the thing that we are likely to say is invaluable, our own images. How many times have I heard, oh, it's just a dream? Oh, it's just a short dream. I didn't feel like writing it up this week. You know, that kind of thing. It just devalues.
And yet, you think just a little tiny thing are important?
Oh, a word is important.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have brief images that are...
Yeah, I tell people to keep count of everything. Because you never know what's being hidden in that thing.
I have a problem with numbers because some people are good with numbers and they do numerology. I've never studied it.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'll get these numbers and I'll think, oh darn, that's going to be one I'm not going to be able to figure out because very seldom can I do anything with numbers. And I know when there's a number repeated a couple times, it's really in there for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And but I will find out what it is maybe at all. You know,
you get 5 or 6 play the lottery.
What do you do with some of those images that come, and it looks like you're in a pressure cooker, you know? They keep coming and coming and different, and you can't really make, you know, like you're talking about bon prawns or vagabond, for example. Not necessarily you have to act out on that, but you would have to be able to discern whether to act out on that or if it's just symbolically in the
fear. I needed somebody to guide me through it. Maybe not everyone does, but I did. Then you can kind of get the hang of it. Okay. That is, the stone is cheap and precious. Next paragraph is on page 162, in the middle of the page. Not terribly difficult, but worth looking at. Length of days and health are in her right hand. and in her left hand glory and infinite riches. Her ways are beautiful operation and praiseworthy, not unsightly nor ill-favored, and her paths are measured and not hasty, but are bound up with stubborn and day-long toil. Now here comes the images I think you can keep in your mind. She is a tree. So tree is an image for Sophia. Of life to them that lay hold of her. And an unfailing light. So there's another image. You've got two images now. Tree and light. Blessed shall they be who retain her, for the signs of God shall never perish. As Alphidius beareth witness, for he saith, he who hath found this science, it shall be his rightful food forever. So a third image, food. So Sophia can be symbolized as trees, as light, and as food. And Hermes saith that if a man who hath this science should live for 1,000 years and every day must feed 7,000 men, yet he should never lack. Well,
is this comparable to Fish's plan?
Right. So what these texts do is they take that ecclesiastical image and then they use it for their own purposes. Definitely.
Yeah, like tree of life too. It's not just a tree.
Right.
It's a tree of life which has capitalistic.
It goes back to the mother goddess. It has a life in the Kabbalah. It's a universal image. Here, trying to express a very important point. Why is Sophia symbolized by a tree?
Nourishment. Tree taking carbon dioxide and put oxygen out. It makes life possible. The tree was also connected to heaven and earth.
Right. Traverses two dimensions. And we've seen that's what Sophia is about, traversing two dimensions. I think the other thing I always think of.
We have a marker. I think we have a marker. See if I got one.
I don't think I can use this one on that. Well, if you just think of a tree, probably I can try it. But is it a permanent? You're not supposed to use permanent on that. It needs to be washable.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's not get them mad. Just think of a tree. If you cut it through the center, you've got a mandala. So it's a tree is a series of mandalas, you could think of it. And that's what Sophia is. Sophia is the serial evolution of your individuality. And the mandala then would be a picture of your individuality.
The painting combines the image of the tree and light and fire.
Show us.
All in one. The little one.
The one I did before, as a person can't really see too well from far away to see. That's the tree.
Oh.
And light and fire.
Just so they can see it. Just walk it around for it.
Oh, okay. Well, you can pass it around if you can keep from touching the surface because it's not finished.
You trust us?
Yeah, I trust you. There's a little black edge you can hang on to.
We had to learn not to touch CDs for a while.
I guess we're trained now.
One other thing that I've recently heard about a tree is that even though you've cut it down, the tree is gone, the roots keep growing.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. But that kind of, I'm wondering how that fits in here.
This pattern is that deep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the light we've seen, the light would be the understanding, right? And the food, I think, would be what we talked about in the fact that Sophia gives people this animated capacity. It's what allows people to be generous. And it's what really feeds, and it's what really allows people to feed. So the Scrooge personality of our time, you see, is alienated from Sophia. None of that was too difficult. Some are easy, some aren't easy. Now we get a little complicated, and we'll spend some time on this last section. Now I'm in the study guide, page 3, number 8. On the study guide, page 3. Some of these we'll go quickly through, and some we'll look at very closely. And this one we're going to look at closely. In the book, in page 3 of the study guide. This doth Senior confirm, saying that such a one is as rich as he that hath a stone from which fire is struck.
That's the same one.
So that equates, Sophia, with the Flintstone. Firestone, is that the same as a Flintstone? Who can give fire to whom he will, and as much as he will, and when he will, without loss to himself. The same is the intent of Aristotle in his second book of the soul, when he saith, to the size and growth of all things in nature, a limit is appointed, but fire by the addition of combustible matter waxes without end. Well, that last sentence is not too hard to figure out. It's the first part we want to dwell on. But the last part is just saying that Sophia is like a fire that is wholly generous and willing to spread.
The fire that takes down the forest is less than generous.
Well, not really in a natural setting.
Well, that's true, but...
Yeah, in a civilized setting, it's
fully generous and willing to what?
Spread. I mean, this is the symbolic mind speaking, that, you know, things have shape, but fire has no shape. And Sophia is not like a thing that has a limit. Sophia is a thing that doesn't have a limit, and it's in her generosity. But that's not the important part. The important part is this fire is struck.
He's talking about a Flintstone. That's what he's talking about. Like a stone from which fire is struck. Flintstones didn't exactly struck fire after fire after fire.
Yeah. You hit two Flintstones together, right? Yeah.
Strike it.
Or with another stone, actually.
Or another stone.
Yeah. Or a piece of metal. Look at the flint and a lighter.
Right.
Piece of metal will do it.
But unlike those in the material world, which do erode away, you have to eventually replace the Flintstone because it chips off.
Mm-hmm.
What they're suggesting is the Sophia is inexhaustible. You have to strike again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. That if you just think about, you know, we'll go into her text, but we can try some of our own work. Think naively, simply about that image. That when something is struck, a fire is generated. In other words, Sophia is what allows you to become creative when you've been struck. And not bitter.
That's worth another one. You've been struck. you're angry, that's fire. That burns up the anger. Fire burns out the anger. So you're not left with bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of us have inexhaustible anger. But well, this creativity, this thing, this is really interesting because it sort of strikes me as almost an aspect of Eros, of endless creativity.
Yeah.
The next standpoint, that aspect of Eros, and so that you can be being struck by inspiration, and people say that as well. That's encouraging because when you go through hell, it's nice to know that you can just come out of something.
With some sacred fire.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at her commentary now. Now we're going to go slowly for a while.
On the striking of her fire to bring this up, is there any way, I'm thinking of that inner spark that we say that we have, you know, that, and so that you're not associating that with this at this time, or is there an association?
Mm-hmm.
So if we have the inner spark, she's striking, and that's where the creativity is coming from, mm-hmm. So I'm...
We'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very much the idea. You know. 165. In light of these conceptions, it is clear that wisdom is not a personification of the individual soul. Now let that sink in for a while. Not a personification of the individual soul. That seems to contradict everything we've said so far. For the author likens her to a firestone from which inexhaustible fire can be struck. And emphasizes that though all natural things have a limit to their extension, and thus have form, fire does not. I'm going to skip down a little bit, a couple of sentences. Her action, see where I am there? Not unlike that of the soul, does not aim at individual form, but is capable of infinite extension. Does not aim at individual form, but is capable of infinite extension. So twice we've got that it does not aim at individual form, and it is not a personification of the individual soul. We've got to figure out what that means in a minute. She gives the prime impulse towards all being and all knowing in their endlessly diverse forms, and as an inexhaustible vitalizing principle, her range of action is unlimited. Okay, nothing so new there. But here's the new part again. She therefore acts transpersonally, beyond and outside the individual. So we got it again, outside the individual. As an ordering principle, that's what we've been talking about. Showing him the way, directing the steps. Okay, that's what we've said so far, right? Directing the steps and so on. That's nothing new. But what I want to have you chew on is where she goes from the inexhaustible quote. That it is not a personification of the individual soul, it does not aim at individual form, and it acts transpersonally. There are worlds in that paragraph, and I wonder if you can see any of it.
Talking about the archetype.
No, but you're close. I think it's really a statement about history. You give up?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. Oh, my question is, what does that mean? Well, let me give you an example of how I've tried to understand this part. And some of you have heard this before, so bear with me, but I want to put it in a slightly different context. You know, I've been fascinated by this physicist Wolfgang Pauli.
Oh, yeah.
Pauli, make a long story short, got to know Jung, spent World War II in the States, went back after the Second World War to Zurich, where he had a post teaching at the Technical University there. Pauli was one of the guys that discovered the new physics. And he refused to work on the Manhattan Project. He was the only one who did. And when the bombs went off, he fell into a horrific depression. He went back to Zurich and went back to Jung. He had seen Jung for a personal crisis earlier, or some Jungians for a personal crisis earlier, and worked on his dreams for the rest of his life, which actually was only about 18 years. One of the key dreams, to back up a second, to give you a very rough summary of what he was dreaming of Sophia. And what he understood, what he understood by that, was that science had to make a step in its ability to conceive of reality in a way that would understand Sophia. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They have not. And he knew they couldn't, but he knew that was... his job was to articulate that question. Well, he kind of didn't. He kind of flubbed it.
A way to conceive of reality that incorporates...
Sophia. In other words, if you... Slight diversion, but... If you say a physicist's job is to understand the material world, the actions in the material world, and if you say at certain moments that material world acts in a certain way in a synchronicity, then you're not really giving a complete description of nature unless you can explain synchronicity. Those electrons in that Pegasus truck were behaving in a certain way because of this synchronicity. And Pauli realized that the physics has to understand that. And that's what came up in his dreams. As a response, strangely enough, to his question, where have we gone wrong? How did science lead to catastrophe? What he dreamt of was Sophia as the answer. Also, what he dreamt of were Arabs who wanted to join the university where he was teaching, and they were not admitted. Now, that was 50 years ago. That the Arab worldview likewise has something to contribute to the evolution of science. And that a true science has got to now develop in a way that can come to grips with the way the Muslims see reality as well as the way we see reality. See, that was part of Pauli's personal story. He was to, as a scientist of repute, speak to the scientific world about its limitations and about where research needed to go. He didn't do that. He died. But that was his Sophia story. Okay. But you can see that that also touches on our historical moment. We are now being attacked by those Arabs, fundamentalist Muslims at least, that were in his dream. So that story of his wasn't just his story. It's his little piece of the world story descending into his unconscious and surfacing, showing how one individual who is asking deep questions is receiving images of the historical challenges of the time, and the historical challenges of the time and his challenges of the time intersect. They aren't two different things. That's what I think she means, that this is not just a personal soul. There's a historical soul as well. There's a historical process going on. And each historical moment puts different questions to the time. And the sensitive individual hears those questions in terms of their version of those questions. So when you start looking at Sophia, you get into very deep waters. You're not just talking about the evolution of your life. You're talking about the evolution of your society. Because Sophia is not only your individual story, it's the story of your time, and your individual story is a part of that story of the time. And see, what the self-centered personality can't do is understand that. That you, our job here is to contribute to the external social political world in the way that your individual story leads you to do. There is, in a way, an incredible optimism here that history stories and individual stories converge. And you don't give to the world by giving to the world. You give to the world by knowing your story, and that story will be part of the world's story. And by working on that, you're giving to the world. That's how I think Sophia solves the Christian generosity problem, that you should be generous. There's no should be generous here. The only should is following what Sophia is asking you to do. And she will lead you into a task that is at the same time what this era needs. So she's both a spiritual phenomenon and a political phenomenon. She's both. Yeah.
Okay, you said in Pauli dreaming of Sophia, did he dream of one of the symbols representing Sophia, or did he dream of the name of Sophia?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, was it his discussions with Jung that would have made him aware of Sophia? I mean, the average physicist may not be aware of it.
Well, Pauli... Pauli was a European, and they are educated classically from day one. So
that's a common phrase, Sophia, with the educated Europeans at the time. Because it wasn't me. I consider myself educated, but American.
But we're educated Americans.
So it's just not a common place.
That's part of the normal education. I don't think we realize how badly we are educated. Yeah, von Franz said to a colleague of mine after an exam, you know, the problem with you is your American education. This breadth of cultural, how do I want to say it, cultural iconography, it would just be part of educated. I think even now, and certainly in their day, they were doing Latin and Greek and
right. I was thinking that
Latin and Greek
and
in high school.
An educated person in America today hasn't read many of the classics.
Right.
I suppose it could be an educated person who hasn't even read Shakespeare. I don't
know. Yeah. So certainly, it had probably some influence to do with Jung, but the intricacies of his dreams—they've just been published. I think I mentioned that—are such that I don't think they could have all been explained by. by his knowledge, consciously acquired from you. But that was how I understand this fact that it is not just the individual soul, Sophia. I mean, what we're doing now, we're taking our basic description of Sophia and we're enlarging it a bit. Because everything I've said up to now has been that she's your individual story. She's your pattern of identity. And I'm just trying to show you that it's bigger than that now. Eric Erickson did, I think, a really nice thing when he developed his concept of identity. And his concept of identity is the pattern of your individuality within yourself, the pattern of your individuality in the external world, and the identity of those two. See, it's always both. And that's what she's trying to get at with Sophia. It's your individual story, but if I can stretch your imagination a little bit and get you realizing that there is another story besides our personal stories. There is something like a historical story.
The world soul.
There's a world soul. And I don't know quite how to conceive of that. I don't want to say that history is predetermined. But it sure does look from that instance of Paldi where he put to his unconscious, please help me understand this time. Please help me lift my darkness because I feel guilty that my work led to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Help me understand this. And what's he get with Sophia and Arabs? And then 50 years later, they appear.
You can accept the concept of a collective unconscious.
Right.
A consciousness, you can accept the concept of a world
story. World story, yeah. World soul, right. So Sophia really is the convergence of the world soul and your soul. And I say that, I think it's so important, because we live in such self-centered times. But really, and Jung has been accused of all sorts of narcissistic extravagances and this and that, and Jungian psychology is just navel-gazing, blah, blah, blah. But if you really understand the nature of the unconscious, you see there is this convergence of the individual and the society. And what we're trying to do is not help people become socially minded. We're helping people to become themselves. But part of that self is a relationship to the social situation, which is an instinct. It's not a moral statement. It's an urge to join when you know what that real story is. So this, I think, is Jung's attempt to find a new basis for generosity.
I may be pushing it a little bit, but I'm looking at her. Could this be interior, exterior, and the world? So.
Yeah. Yeah, quick, remember, this is a photograph from a telescope, but your imagination is very lively.
The interior, the two circles are interior, exterior, and then the one in the middle would be the world. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vessel of discus is made from that fish symbol that they talk about. It's interlocking two circles. It's made from
that. Same idea. Well, I just think this is, I don't know how you think about it, I just think it's so exciting that Jung has found a new way to become involved in the world.
And you're not just projecting him?
What would I be projecting?
I don't know, in fact, there is this political realm or social relationship realm, not just the individual.
Well, I can only say that it's a hypothesis based on data, slim data, and that data is that Pauli's dreams put to his individual life a challenge in imagery that our social, political challenge is facing us in this very same image.
Yeah, the crisis was only deepening in the intervening 5 decades.
Yeah. And see, who would have known at that time that what the collision between Islam and the West would be? But these dreams are so far in advance.
Who would have thought it would have happened?
And who would have thought it would have happened again, right?
I mean, but there's that old adage, you have to know foreign history, yeah. And by the way, I don't know the etymology of the word history, but isn't it time we wrote a little of our story?
Yeah.
This is one. I mean, but
that'd be a good title of the book, really. Okay, well, that was my attempt to explain to you individuals, not individual soul, not individual form, and transpersonal. We keep going. As I said, we're going to go into this passage closely on 166. Just to mention it, it's nothing earth-shaking. The second paragraph on 166, the symbolic fire could be equated to psychic energy. That's not so profound.
Could you say that again, please?
One way to talk about what the fire of Sophia represents is psychic energy. We're going to see it's a lot more than that, but it's one way. How are you holding up? Can you take another big idea? Intellectus agens, or nous poeticos. Third paragraph. Active intellect. We've alluded to this, and hopefully you'll see the merciful wisdom of your instructor when we now will be hearing things in a rather technical language that we've already talked about in an introductory way on the Sophia and Thoughts and Images. We talked about this, that Sophia isn't a knowledge, it's a knowing. So she's going to now talk about it in much more detail, but that's what this is about. She's referring now to, speaking of Arabs, a Muslim alchemist. I'll give the Latinized name, Avicenna. He was a medieval Arabic alchemist. And he said, Sophia is like an active intelligence. And it's a cosmic reality. I'm at the bottom of 166. Whose rays can be likened to rays of light. So light, the light of Sophia would be the consciousness of this other intelligence in us. We're on 167. This intelligence dwells in the planetary spheres and is an extra psychic force present in nature and the root of all human cognition. So the idea here is an intelligence is something that has an existence of its own. The mind isn't something that we alone have. This is the medieval idea of the mind. And now a couple of lines down. When the soul comes into contact with the active intelligence, she becomes reflective. And when she soars up to it in inspired surmise, a holy power streams, etc. Two things here. First of all, it challenges our understanding of understanding. The closest I can, easiest I can explain this to you is through the German. Germans have the same word for spirit and mind. Geist. G-E-I-S-T. Nothing to do with the reservoir. Originally, mind meant the faculty which perceives spirit. Because it, by virtue of it being of that same spirit world. So in the medieval mind, understanding is when this cosmic principle of intelligence surfaces in me, and when it does, I understand. Now, you see, for us, mind means rationality. For them, mind meant non-rationality in its original etymological sense. Why is that important? Because that's what we're trying to cultivate in our work. That original sense of mind which receives intelligence, not simply the mind, which as a subject, objectively, carries out actions through thought and manipulation of reality. Yes.
How closely are the word Geist and Ghost related?
Same. The same in German, it's the same.
Fine.
Geist, ghost, mind, and spirit.
Absolutely.
So you could say in the original sense, understanding was letting the another presence come into you. Mind was a presence. And again, that is what we're trying to help people to do in our analytic work. Develop a receptor to let the presence of the spirit enter. That is not the same mind that calculates and manipulates.
And manipulates
data and thought. You see, we think of mind as I think. The original sense of mind is thoughts occur.
Poetic way of saying it is it dawned on me.
Right.
Talking to for a surgeon.
The light.
Right.
Right.
The cartoon puts the light bulb up
above. Right. Yeah. Right. I'm just aware of the time. Maybe we should hold here and start up with this again, because it goes on. This is just the beginning. This is just the basement. You have several layers. But hopefully you can see where... But this Sophie, the reason we're going into this is Sophie experience means we have to understand how we understand. Because our normal way of understanding can't perceive Sophia. So not only is she an experience, she challenges us to understand how we perceive. And that's why she's going into this. And we'll pick up with that then in 2 weeks. Well, I'll go back over this. So we'll continue going closely on this passage. So you still okay? Okay. See you in a couple weeks.